some bow. When I open my locker to grab my lip balm, I find a red sucker. It's one of those fancy ones that sits in the wooden stand at the grocery store checkout. I twist my lips back and forth for a moment before sliding it into my pocket, trying hard to play it cool in case he's somehow watching. When I was a kid, we used to decorate shoe boxes at school and use them as Valentine's Day mailboxes. We'd leave them on our desks all day. I never liked for anyone to see me check my box. It wasn't that I was scared of not getting any Valentines. It was required. But it was that I always hoped for more. I wanted to be the girl with a special card signed, "Your Secret Admirer." It may not be a note in a shoebox, but it still makes my heart feel like it's made of springs. As I unwrap the sucker, I think about texting Ellen, but turn my phone face down when I can't decide what to say. I slump down in my chair and savor my candy. She could be having sex right now. She could be an official non-virgin, and I wouldn't even know it. I wonder if she talked to Callie after I left. She's probably done it. She'd know what to say to Elle. After I finish my sucker, I chuck the stick and the wrapper in the trash can. I stuff my phone in my bra, and as I'm passing through the kitchen, my boobs buzz. I stop right there to check my phone before I go up front. Ellen. Kind of nervous. We'll call you later. Ellen. Like, after. Me. You're going to be a total sex kitten. Meow. Ellen. You're the best. Maybe I can stay over tonight at your house and talk? XO. My sticky lips break into a faint grin. I look up to see Beau staring at me as I put my phone back in my bra, only to realize 2 seconds too late how awkward it might look to be stuffing your hand down your shirt in front of the guy you like. I've been stared at a lot in my life, enough to know that when someone gets caught staring, instinct says to look away. But Beau keeps on looking, like he's got nothing to be ashamed of. Color floods my cheeks. I wipe the back of my hand across my lips and start my closing duties up front. Ron lets Marcus leave a few minutes early at the end of the night because Tiffany is waiting and she's pissed about something. Sitting in his office, Ron finishes the end of the night paperwork while Beau mops up the kitchen and I scrub down all the countertops.
"Watch out,"
he says.
"I just mopped behind you."
I step lightly, careful not to slip, and wash the grease from my hands using the big industrial sink. All my jobs are done, but I find myself keeping busy while Beau finishes the floors. I fill the sink for him so that the mop can soak overnight, how Lydia likes it.
"You two head on home," calls Ron. "I'll see y'all later."
I rush to my locker to grab my things, like I'm scared Beau might leave without me or something. I follow him out the back, and he holds the door open for me so that I have to duck beneath his arm, which doesn't even smell bad, by the way. How can he spend the night flipping burgers and not smell like a fast food menu? As we walk to our cars in silence, his hand accidentally brushes mine. And I wonder what it might feel like if he caught it, letting our fingers entwine. Standing at my car, I look over the hood and say, "Thanks for the sucker." He doesn't turn, but tilts his head up to the sky.
"Good night, Willow Dean."
Chapter 7. Without me even having to ask, Elle gives me every gory detail of losing her virginity. They did it in Tim's bedroom because his mom was out of town visiting his grandma, and his dad, a police officer, was working the late shift. We lay nose to nose in my bed with the lights off. "How did it feel?" I ask. "Not it, but like, how did it make you feel?" She closes her eyes for a second. "I felt in control, like, of my life." She opens her eyes. "And loved. But I feel funny too." "How do you mean?" "We did this grown-up thing, this really adult thing, but we were still ourselves. We still laughed and made jokes. I expected to feel like this whole new person, but really it was me, plain old me, making this decision that I can never unmake. I nod. I nod with fervor because pared down to those terms, I understand. With the tips of her fingers, Elle touches my cheeks, and for the first time, I notice the sparse tears rolling down my face. She touches her forehead to mine, and I don't know who falls asleep first. Despite pageant supplies swallowing my house, the next few weeks are pretty okay. I work mostly with Ron, but sometimes Lydia. Mondays and Wednesdays are always pie, but it's Fridays and Saturdays that can be killer. Mom hates that we're open until midnight, but there's not much I can do about that. One Friday night, as we're shutting down, Ron walks into the dining room carrying plastic-wrapped towers of cups.
"Got new cups,"
he says, and drops them all on the counter. "What's wrong with the ones we have now?" I ask. He tears the plastic from one of the towers and hands me a red cup. Our logo is there, but beneath that, in italicized letters, it says, "Official sponsor of Clover City's Miss Teen Bluebonnet Pageant." Sometimes I think the pageant is like Christmas, and we just keep trying to celebrate it earlier and earlier until it turns into a year-round event.
"One of those girls on your mom's committee came by, and well, my mama won back in 77. I couldn't pass up an opportunity to support the crown jewel of Clover City."
I feel myself frowning. "So we're just gonna chuck all the perfectly fine cups we already have in favor of these?" He shrugs.
"Restock the dispensers before we head out, would you?"
I always forget how horrible the second half of the year leading up to the pageant is. The thing crowds in around my life, leaving barely enough room for air. After we're done closing up, Marcus and Ron are in their cars and reversing out of their parking spots before Beau and I are even to our cars. As I'm unlocking my door, I don't have one of those fancy clicker things. Beau says,
"There's a meteor shower tonight. It's a small one."
I throw my bag onto the passenger seat.
"How do you know?" "My stepmom. She's big into stars and astrology."
I know very little about astrology, except that my mom's church calls it witchcraft. Without deciding to, I close my car door. "I've never seen a meteor shower." He nods toward the bed of his truck as the parking lot lights flicker off.
"Let's wait for it."
I suck in a breath. This is what it feels like when your life starts happening, I think. "You got anything for us to sit on back there?" He turns on his radio and grabs a Holy Cross letter jacket from the cab of his truck.
"Use this."
Beau makes a show of closing his eyes as I hoist myself onto his truck. I'm hoping his eyes are actually closed, because the word hoisting and my polyester work dress do not belong in the same sentence. He offers me his hand, and I'm not ashamed to admit that I pretend to need it. I'm surprised to know that his fingers are calloused with wear. I like how they contrast against my own skin. Once I'm settled, it's hard to let go. He winces a little as he pulls himself up. "Are you okay?"
"Bum knee."
He sits next to me, holding his legs straight as he does. "What's wrong with it? Is it an injury, or has it always been like that?"
"A little of both."
"But you're okay?" He coughs into his fist.
"Yeah."
The last lights on the street flicker off. We might live inside the city limits, but every night when this town shuts down, it's hard to forget how secluded we are. We're not off a highway or any major route, so it's the type of place that can only be found by those who want to find it. Beau glances at the clock on his cell phone.
"Should be dark enough to see them."
I can easily make out the shape of constellations.
"You said your stepmom's into astrology?"
He rubs his knuckles across his chin.
"Yeah."
"Your parents are divorced?" He shakes his head, but says nothing. I'm sorry for asking. I have the manners of a cat in a box of bubble wrap. Like, it's a problem."
"No,"
he says.
"It's not that. I don't mind talking to you. So don't apologize for it, okay?" I just don't do much talking. It takes getting used to.
I lean my head against the rear window of his cab and cross my legs at the ankle. I, on the other hand, talk like the world will only continue to spin if it can revolve around me.
I like listening to you talk.
He laughs.
It's kind of like Stockholm Syndrome. At first it was a little terrifying, but now it's sort of comforting. Like, the world could be ending, but I could come to work, and you'd be talking like it's your duty.
I'm sorry, I say, but was that some sort of backhanded way of saying that I'm captivating?
Very punny,
he says. I smack his arm. He grabs my hand, not giving it back. The radio behind us crackles out Creepin' In, that Norah Jones and Dolly Parton song. And everything in this little town is dark, but I can feel Beau's eyes connecting with mine.
It's starting,
he whispers, and finally lets go of my hand. I let out a shuddering breath I didn't know I was holding in.
It's a small meteor shower,
he whispers.
Sorry it's not more impressive.
I'm still completely taken with it all. Faraway streaks of light split through the sky, leaving traces like a bruise. I shake my head. No, I've never seen one. I think that makes it special enough, right? We both tilt our heads even further to the sky. It's a few minutes before he says,
"The first meteor shower I saw was huge. I never wanted it to end."
Well, I say, you can't have stuff this good all the time. It would turn you rotten. He nods. We sit there for a long time, like this is all some good song on the radio that we can't pause. Don't you sort of feel like we're the only people in the world who are seeing this? I say after a little while, almost scared of ruining the moment.
I don't know.
Beau's voice is a quiet rumble.
My mom died 5 years ago. And I guess I like to think that wherever she is, her sky has meteor showers too.
Each word is a naked patch of him. And I want so badly to add up all the breadcrumbs I have and make sense of him. I wait for some kind of disclaimer from him about his theory being dumb, or that he's sorry for being a downer. Because that's what I would say. But there's no apology from Beau. And I like that. I like that he has nothing to be sorry for. I want to tell him that I feel bad about his mom, or that I like thinking of Lucy that way too. But instead I say, I guess it's an awfully big sky not to share. Chapter 8. The next morning when my mom asks me what time I got home, I lie, and say the place was an even bigger mess than normal. My lips twitch the whole time with the memory of sitting in the back of Beau's truck. I should call Ellen, I know, and tell her every detail. But I don't want to share this yet. I like the idea of keeping my world in these little compartments where there is no risk of collision. The Saturday night crowd is pretty brutal. It's always dead from 10:30 to 11:30, and then, as we're getting ready to close, we get one last rush. Ron's in the back helping with the food, and I'm taking orders. Marcus is on drive-thru for the night. The headset barely fits around his bush of hair. Between drive-thru orders, he runs over to help me assemble trays of food, but still the line is consistently 10 deep. I've stopped even bothering to look up from my register until I hear, "Oh my God! I totally forgot that Ellen said you worked here!" My shoulders slump as I recognize the voice. Callie leans across the counter and says, "I am so sorry, but those uniforms are the worst." "Welcome to Harpy's Burgers and Dogs. How can I help you?" I ask. Her boyfriend, Camden or Brandon or whatever his name is, tosses Callie his wallet and says,
"Gotta take a leak."
They exchange a kiss, which, I mean, why? Is he going to drown in the toilet? And Callie looks back at me with a sympathetic smile.
"Okay, so could we get a number one with a Dr. Pepper? No tomato and extra grilled onions.
Swap those fries for tater tots, too, if you don't mind. And I'll have a burger. No cheese. And a kids fry. Her smile turns conspiratorial. Cheating on my pageant diet already. Boys are such a bad influence. $10.74 is your total. This is probably weird of me to ask, but maybe one day me and Elbel could come over. I would love to, like, just talk to your mom about the pageant and the year she won. Like, in a casual way. I don't even know this girl, and she's elbowing her way through my life. Like, everything is hers for the taking. I've been really busy, I say, my voice deadpan. She squints her eyes at me for a second before smiling and thumbing through her boyfriend's wallet for a 20. Holy shit. Did you completely die when... She lowers her voice. Ellen told you about her and Tim's oral mishap? What? I knew Elle was talking to Callie and not me about this stuff. I shake the surprise off my face. Oh, yeah. Totally nuts, I say. Your order will be out soon. I'm so mad. I knew this would happen. I knew that sex would create a rift between me and Ellen. But more than anything, I feel inadequate. Ron comes out from the kitchen and says, "We're closing up, folks. You either take your food to go or you don't take it at all." I stuff Callie's food in a bag and hand it to her as her boyfriend walks out of the bathroom. After we've locked the lobby doors and have closed the register, I head to the kitchen to gather up some trash. "I'm taking this stuff out back." "Give me a few minutes," Beau says. "I'll help." When he's done and Marcus has turned off the drive-through lights, Beau follows me out the back door, each of us carrying several bags of dripping trash. As the door is about to swing shut behind us, Beau kicks a rock in between the door and the frame. He drops his trash to the ground and takes mine from me and tosses it over his head and into the dumpster. He does the same with his bags. "Thanks." I turn to go back inside.
"Wait."
His fingers brush my elbow and I suck in a breath.
"Last night, I liked hanging out with you."
"I know," I say. "I mean, me too." I reach for the doorknob.
"Willow Dean."
His voice startles me. He's so close, I can smell his skin, thick with sweat. I part my lips to respond, but he leans in, pauses for a second, and pushes my words away when his mouth meets mine. I don't have time to think about his tongue in my mouth and how my tongue is answering his. Not sure what to do with them. I hold my hands at my sides, my fingers balled into a fist. He tastes like artificial cherry and toothpaste. I want to kiss him until my lips fall off. He pulls away. My first kiss. It's the fastest thing that lasts forever. The midnight air is hot and dry, but that doesn't stop me from wrapping my arms around myself. I wait for the words, either his or mine, but nothing comes. The shock I feel is etched into his expression. I run my thumb along my bottom lip and walk back inside. He doesn't stop me. Closing takes forever. The dining room is a mess, and so is the kitchen. But I barely notice because my thoughts are absorbed with Beau and my first kiss. My first kiss. Which took place behind Harpy's Burgers and Dogs and next to a dumpster full of day-old trash. Yeah, it was perfect. Every bone in my body aches. Like I've been in a car accident, and there's nothing physically wrong with me. But still, I can feel the impact of it everywhere. At the end of the night, I'm in my car and pulling out of the exit before Ron's even locked the door behind him. I roll to a stop at the light on the corner and scrub my hands up and down my face as I try to process all that happened tonight. A car horn honks and I glance up at the light, but it's still red. I hear a muffled yell to my right. Beau sits in the neighboring lane, waving his arms, pointing at my window. This isn't even how he goes home. We always turn in the opposite direction. Him, east. Me, west. The minute I roll down my window, he starts talking.
"I'm sorry," he says. "I shouldn't have just..."
"Kissed you?" my head fills in.
done that. I just...
He glances up, and I watch as he notices the light for the intersecting street turning yellow.
Follow me. Please.
I glance at the clock. It's already 1:35 in the morning. The car behind him honks.
Please?
He drives off and changes lanes so that he's in front of me. I probably shouldn't follow a guy I only kind of know down a dark road in the middle of the night. Because he could, like, kill me. And then it wouldn't matter if I was fat or if my first kiss had been next to a dumpster, because I'd be super screwed. When the road splits and it's me who should be heading right, I veer left and follow a strange boy down a dark road, the sky above us in a deep sleep. Chapter 9. We drive all the way to the edge of town to the old elementary school that caught on fire a few years ago and has since been condemned. This is probably one of those red flags. I think maybe I'm missing some kind of self-preservation alarm in my head because this has cautionary tale written all over it. When we park, I wait for him to get out of his car first. If Elle were here, she'd tell me to grab a tire iron or to heat up the car lighter. But she's not. I search my front seat for a weapon, but all I've got is an empty jar of peanut butter, $1.32 and change, and some junk mail I forgot to take in the house a few weeks ago. I weigh my keys in my hand for a moment. Aha! I take my three keys on my ring, car, house, L's, and hold my hand in a fist, so that each of the keys is peeking out from between my fingers. I remember seeing this on a self-defense special of Maury. Television saves lives. I feel ridiculous, but whatever. Bo leans against the hood of his old truck. Along the side is the shadow of lettering. Like he bought the truck off someone who'd owned a business. So, this is creepy, I say, motioning to the school with my non-key shiv hand. The whole place is singed, but you can still see the definitive structure of a school, except for straight down the center, which is entirely gone. The elements have not done the exposed structure any favors. From here, I can see the outline of the playground, entirely dark except for the highlights of the moon. On the entire lot, there is only one lone streetlight. We are far outside of its glow.
Sorry.
He's taken off his work shirt. I can see it draped over the bench seat inside his truck, and is wearing his crewneck undershirt. The chain I always notice peeking out from beneath his work shirt carries a patron's saint pendant.
I used to go here, before it burned down. It's the only place on this side of town that I could think to go to at this time of night.
Oh. I want to ask him what happened with his mom and who his favorite teacher was and if he took the bus or if his parents gave him rides every morning. But I don't. I want. He starts laughing. And not some quiet chuckle. He's gasping for air.
You come prepared,
he says, pointing to my fist. I hold my self-defense hand up. You led me to an abandoned elementary school that has, I want to kill you and play dress up with your dead body written all over it. His laughter subsides for a moment, and he says,
okay, that's fair. Good on you.
I drop the keys in the pocket of my dress and kick a few pieces of gravel around. Just don't kill me. A smile flickers for a moment before he says,
I shouldn't have kissed you like that, without asking.
So why did you? Each word comes out like a drop in an empty bucket.
You know how when you're a kid and you're having a great day, you like your teacher, your friends are okay, you don't suck at school. But then you do something that you would never be able to stop, even if you saw it coming.
He sees the confusion on my face.
Like calling your teacher mom.
I can't hide my horrified expression. Wait, what? I'm sorry, but did you compare kissing me to calling your teacher mom? He pushes his hands through his hair and groans.
No.
Well, yes. But it was like this reaction I had, like this thing I couldn't control.
And now you're embarrassed?
No, no.
He throws his hands out, like they could wash away his words.
I meant that it felt like I couldn't help it. I'm only embarrassed that I didn't even take the time to read you, that I just did it. And I'm sorry if that's not something you wanted me to do.
It's okay, I say, mostly because he normally doesn't talk so much, and I'm a little mesmerized by it. He steps forward.
Is it okay, as in, don't let it happen again, or was it okay?
I shrug because the rest of my body is frozen. He takes another step forward. It's quiet for a moment. This is my chance to step back and stop whatever this is from happening. I feel my self-control slipping.
Because I think you kissed me back.
My cheeks flood with heat. He's got me there. It didn't suck. It just wasn't, like, explosions, I lie.
So, mediocre?
I bite down on my lips, making them disappear. I take three steps, closing the distance between us. He props his elbows up against his truck and tilts his head back. I do the same, and for a moment, we share the sky until I break the silence. So you kissed me on an impulse? The tension winding through my muscles eases as I find myself getting more comfortable with him. But why? There's still that hum, though. That vibration of adrenaline. Drizzles of rain splash down on top of us, making the air feel instantly thicker with humidity. Beau glances up, like he might somehow figure out how to make it stop.
Let's get in the truck.
He opens the passenger door for me, and I hop inside while he jogs around the front and lets himself in. We just miss the onslaught of rain. Drops slap angrily at his windshield. It's so loud he almost has to yell.
On a scale of 1 to 10, he says, how was it?
You're really not going to let this go, are you?
I'm kind of an egomaniac.
I feel brave. I am brave. Maybe you should go for a do-over. Best out of two. He clears his throat, and my eyes are all on him.
Well, I usually prefer to get it right on the first try, but I'd hate to deprive you.
He scoots past his steering wheel, traveling to me. His hand cradles my cheek in his palm. Nodding his head down, his lips nearly meet mine.
You're sure?
Surprising even myself, I don't answer. I kiss him. I kiss Beau Larson. And when he parts his lips with mine, I don't think about it. Because for the first time in my life, I fit. I fit without any question. He braces my cheeks with both hands and pulls me even closer to him. If Elle even feels 1/10 of this with Tim, then I don't know how she waited so long to have sex. Because when Beau's lips move against mine, I can think of nothing outside of us. His hands travel down to my neck and along my shoulders. His touch sends waves of emotion through me. Excitement, terror, glee, everything all at once. But then his fingers trace down my back into my waist. I gasp. I feel it like a knife in the back. My mind betrays my body. The reality of him touching me, of him touching my back fat and my overflowing waistline, it makes me want to gag. I see myself in comparison to every other girl he's likely touched, with their smooth backs and trim waists.
I'm sorry.
His breath is hot and short. No, I say, don't. Don't be sorry. I'm not that girl. I don't spend hours staring in the mirror, thinking of all the ways I could be better. Me shrinking away from his touch embarrasses me in a way I don't entirely understand. He shakes his head.
No, I mean, I shouldn't have. I don't think I shouldn't be dating anyone right now.
I guess what's funny is that until he mentioned it, the thought,
The possibility of us together hadn't even crossed my mind.
Oh, it comes out like a sigh.
I have a lot of shit going on, and I shouldn't. Or at least I haven't for a while.
I nod. If any other girl had told me that she'd been told this by a guy, I'd tell her to back it up, to put the brakes on, because he sounds like a jerk. I just can't think that about Bo. But I guess this is how every girl in the history of the sexes has been played, because the rules apply to every situation except your own. I open the door to his truck. I better get home. Rain splatters inside the interior.
It's late.
That's it. That's all he has to say.
I'll see you at work.
It takes 2.5 seconds for the rain to soak through my clothes. My dignity has left the building. I get in my car and speed off out of the parking lot. I turn the volume on the radio all the way up in the hope that it might drown out everything rattling inside of me. Lucy, my mom, Ellen, Beau. Little versions of each of them seem to live inside of me, one louder than the next. The only voice that isn't there, the one I need the most, is my own. Chapter 10. It is officially too hot to go swimming, even for Ellen. Jake slithers in and out of our hands as we watch a daytime talk show about a woman who is in love with her brother, but didn't know he was her brother because they didn't grow up together. They have got to be lying, I said. Elle shakes her head. No, no, they're weird, but I think they're telling the truth. Plus, why would they lie? Because they're gross and because they know it? They probably got caught and needed an excuse or something. God, she huffs. You are such a skeptic. Would it hurt you to believe that not everyone has shitty intentions? Jake coils around my wrist. His scales are smooth from having just shed. I'm not always a skeptic, but the odds of them telling the truth are practically non-existent. I mean, that's like saying Tim could be your brother. She's so engrossed in the show that she doesn't answer. This would be a good time to tell her about what happened with Beau. My mom was already asleep when I got home, but she said she heard me come in after 2, and that next time that happened, she would call my boss. An unladylike hour, she called it. It sort of killed me that she automatically assumed I came straight from work. I was making out with a boy in an abandoned parking lot, I wanted to scream. But that sounds pretty unbelievable, even to me. And I was there. I don't know how to form the words to explain to Elle that not only did I get my first kiss, but it ended up being a full-on makeout session. She'd already be pissed at me for not telling her about my feelings for him in the first place. And even though neither of us said that what happened last night was a secret, it feels like one. That's stupid, I guess, because Elle would never think this. But I feel like last night was so completely unfathomable. A boy, a totally hot boy who girls stare at, kiss me. Like, really kiss me. It was the type of kiss that leaves you short of breath. I don't know how to talk about that with my best friend. Not to mention that if I told her about last night, I'd also have to tell her how the night ended, with Beau promising that this would never happen again, and with me mortified by the thought of his hands touching my body. I don't want to tell her any of that, though. As foolish as it is, I want to preserve her good impression of him because I guess a little part of me thinks that despite how last night ended, he and I might somehow still stand a chance. But a chance at what? At being boyfriend and girlfriend? The idea is so ridiculous to me that I can't even imagine what it might feel like to hold someone's hand in public. It's not that I feel unworthy. I deserve my happy ending. But what if, for me, Beau is a high point, and for him, I'm a lapse in judgment? I need Lucy. The credits on the talk show begin to roll, and Elle wipes a few straight tears from her cheek. Oh my God, she says. Oh my God, that was so sad. They love each other so much and they can't help it. And society will never understand. Are you on the rag or something? You're a real shithead sometimes, you know that? she stands with Jake. I'm putting him up. You want to hang out for lunch? I smile. I better go home. I want to dig through some of Lucy's stuff before my mom gets home. She started cleaning her room out a few weeks ago. I follow Elle to her room as she lowers Jake into his cage. He nestles himself beneath his heat lamp. The light clings to his scales, and he revels in it. After a few minutes, Elle says, Will? Yeah? Luce used to wear this bee brooch when we were kids. Do you remember that? The one she'd wear on her winter coat when she'd pick us up from school? My mouth goes dry. I nod. She wore it on the collar of her winter coat. This was before she was at her largest, but still pretty big. The coat was black and drab, and obviously purchased for the sake of utility without any thought of fashion. It's the type of sacrifice you make when you're a bigger person. Her brooch, though, was like the sun peeking through dark clouds. She'd call us her beautiful girls and take us for hot chocolate on Mondays, because Fridays didn't deserve all the attention. It was funny. I used to think of myself as a Monday and Ellen as a Friday. But Mondays and Fridays were just 24-hour stretches of time with different names. If you see that brooch, and only if you don't want it, would you mind keeping it for me? Not that I'm, like, owed it or anything, but I always really loved it. Yeah, I say. I'll be sure to look for it. Since the day she died, I felt that Lucy was only mine to memorialize, and that if I faltered, I'd be letting her down in the worst kind of way. The realization that she wasn't just mine comes as a painful relief. Chapter 11. I will not kiss Bo Larson. I will not think about Bo Larson. I will not kiss Bo Larson. I will not think about Bo Larson. It's a mantra that repeats over and over again in my head. And whenever I'm by myself, I even say it out loud. A few hours before I leave for work on Monday afternoon, my mom asks me to fill a prescription for her, because she's scared the pharmacy will be closed when she gets off work. I drive downtown to Luther and Sons Pharmaceuticals. Because parking is limited, I have to take a spot in front of All That Shines, a jewelry store nearly as old as Clover City, which has been the sole distributor of Miss Blue Bonnet crowns for the entire state of Texas. The heat clings to my shoulders as I'm locking my door. Shit, I mumble. In front of my parking spot, and anchored to a bucketful of cement, is a sign that reads, Customers Only. I double-check, but see no parking, so I take a second to run inside. Behind the dusty glass case, sitting on a creaking wooden stool, is Donna Lufkin. The Lufkins have such family pride that not even conservative tradition can sway a Lufkin woman into changing her last name when she gets married. Donna, though, never did get married. Donna is round with a sturdy build. Her cargo shorts are frayed at the edges, and her gardening clogs smell like they've been doing exactly what they were made for. She's the opposite of what you might expect from a person who sells pageant crowns. Sure, she sells other stuff, but it's the crowns that make this place a landmark. Willow Dean Dixon, she says. I haven't seen you since... She stops herself. Lucy's funeral, I finish. She nods, but doesn't try to smile, which I appreciate more than she will ever know. Did your mama send you in for something? I just got the new crowns in. No, ma'am. Just not a whole lot of parking out there, and I was wondering if I could leave my car while I run inside the pharmacy. She waves me off. Hell, those signs don't do a bit of good anyway. Thanks, I tell her with one hand on the door. You want to see them? See what? She grins. The crowns, of course. Now, this might seem like no big deal, but the cubic zirconia pageant crowns are guarded more safely than the bank across the street. No matter how much I despise this pageant, it's not something I can just say no to. Donna locks the front door, and I follow her through the curtain leading to the stockroom. We have to walk through two offices before she unlocks a tiny closet lined in boxes. Each box is marked with the names of towns from all over the state, but front and center are three labeled Clover City.
Wait, I say. Why do we have three?
She counts them out on her fingers.
One, the original. Sometimes it goes on display at City Hall. Two, the one given to the winner. Three, held in reserve in case crown number two goes missing.
She takes all three boxes and lines them up on her desk. The one given to the winner and the backup are almost identical. But the original? Well, it looks like the type of thing you'd find in your grandmother's jewelry box. The rhinestones are foggy and the metal tarnished with age, but there's still something so regal about it. I like that it's not too shiny or too prissy like the newer crowns, and yet it has a presence. Donna catches me looking at the original.
I like her best, too.
For a moment, the pageant makes sense, and I get why my mom devotes half of her life to it, and why most of the girls in this city dream of gowns and spotlights when the sky is heavy with stars.
Do you ever try them on?
Her cheeks turn the lightest shade of pink.
Between you, me, and these four walls? Once in a while?
With great care, she reaches into the box holding the original.
Try it on.
Are you sure? With my luck, I would be the person to break the original crown. She looks directly at me.
You think I look like the type of woman who isn't sure?
I shake my head. She situates me in front of the mirror on the back of her door. I hold my breath as she places the crown on top of my head. I know it's just costume jewelry, and that none of this is real, but that doesn't stop me from feeling the weight of the crown like a responsibility. I wish Lucy or Ellen or even my mom were here to see me in my red and white Harpies uniform, with Clover City's prized possession resting atop my head.
Truth be told, I don't think your mom has even tried it on.
Best not to tell anyone about this. I say yes with my eyes, because I'm scared to even nod.
Why are you letting me try it on?
She shrugs.
Maybe because you don't always have to win a pageant to wear a crown.
I will not kiss Bo Larson. I will not think about Bo Larson.
Marcus called in sick. Like, he could somehow smell how awkward tonight was guaranteed to be. The shine of the crown has worn off, and we are slammed. Bo ends up having to come out of his kitchen cave to help me unregister. From what I can tell, the only phrases in his vocabulary are,
dine in or take out,
and
that'll be
insert total. Every now and again, our hands brush or we bump into each other, and every touch sends electricity through my veins. But when he gets into an argument with a customer over pickles, Ron tells him to go back to the kitchen. At the end of the night, Ron sends us all home early and promises to come in tomorrow morning to do the closing checklist. I would protest because my mother taught me that a Southern lady always puts up a fight when anyone else volunteers to do the cleaning, but I'm all too ready to be home. I try to be quick and beat Bo out the door, but with every step I take, he's on my heels. I have got to find a new job. My hand is on the door of my car, and I'm nearly home free.
Willow Dean.
I turn. He moves toward me so quickly that I feel like I'm moving, too. Our noses brush, and his lips stop short of mine. My mind's eye has yet to catch up and process that he is here, in my bubble, redefining everything I thought I knew of myself. My discretion, my pride. They're both gone, and it's like I've got horse blinders on. I'm kissing Bo Larson. I am thinking of Bo Larson. For the first time in my life, I feel tiny. I feel small. And not in the shrinking flower kind of way. This feeling, it empowers me.
I want to kiss you,
he says. And with each word, his lips brush against mine. I lose all words, and instead, lace my fingers through his hair and pull his lips to meet mine.
2 months later. Chapter 12. Standing on my tiptoes to reach the top shelf, I feel my apron fall loose, the tie at my waist coming undone. I glance behind me to my right, and then to my left to see Beau grinning. He winks. Beau has become the best and worst part of my day. The watch on my wrist tells me it's 6:02 p.m. Time for my break. I shove the last bag of buns onto the shelf, carelessly crushing them, no doubt, and turn to follow him. My feet carry me without my mind having any say. Behind me, noise fades, and all I hear are the echoes of harpies. Orders shouted out, customers complaining, Marcus whistling, meat sizzling. It all fades to zero. Until earlier this summer, I'd never known anything like this. It's the moment right before I grab the bag of trash piled on top of the crates in the back and kick the already ajar back door open. It's the second before I drop the leaking plastic bag next to the dumpster, as Beau Larson crushes me up against the metal door and nothing but his lips touch me. It's that millisecond of no hands, just lips. Then, like a dam releasing water, his hands roam and the moment is gone. And I remember how uncomfortable his touch on my soft body makes me feel. When it hits, my mind turns back on like it's on a timer. Every moment feels rehearsed because as things between us progressed, I spent more and more energy trying to predict what he might do next. And now I know. I know that when he inches me toward the short dumpster with the lid and holds his hand around my waist, that he wants to lift me up. So I always reach back and hoist myself up, because the thought of him trying to lift me and failing makes me cringe every time. When his fingers trail down my chest and across my stomach, I suck in. Which is stupid, because it never makes any difference in pictures, and I doubt it does now. It's in those moments that I'm a shadow of the person I was, the woman Lucy had meant for me to be. But when he says my name, it's always a surprise.
Willow Dean,
he says, and each letter tickles all the way down to my toes. Every night, when Ron sends us home, we walk to our cars, a few feet separating us. When we've slipped into the darkness outside the red glow of harpies, Beau brushes his fingers against mine before walking around to his driver's side door.
Follow me.
I don't even bother nodding because I will, and he knows it. He starts his car, and I start mine. This thing between us is a roller coaster. The brakes might be out, and the tracks might be on fire, but I can't make myself get off the ride. Chapter 13. I've learned so much about Beau. And yet, he's still a mystery. Like the thing with red suckers. He used to have anger issues as a kid, so his mom would give him a red sucker and say, if you're still angry after you've licked this lollipop gone, you can scream and kick and shout all you want. But then there were things like his necklace, which he always tucked back into his undershirt every time it fell out. If I ever asked about it, he'd shrug it off and tell me it was some saint pendant from Holy Cross. The old elementary school has become what I guess could be called our spot. I was such a wreck that first time we came here. But this old, half-burned-down elementary school has become our sanctuary. I park beside him, pulling my keys from the ignition and opening my door all at once. He reaches over and pushes the door open for me. I hop up into his truck. He kisses my nose. Reaching beneath his seat, he pulls out a red gift bag creased with use and drops it onto the dashboard.
Happy birthday.
My birthday was 3 days ago. I didn't tell anyone at work, not because I didn't want people to know, but because telling people, mainly Beau, meant that there was pressure for them to do something for me. And that's not how Beau and I have worked. There are no strings, no responsibilities. How'd you find out? He shrugged.
Heard Ron tell you happy birthday.
Can I open it?
No,
he says.
That's your gift. That bag is all you get.
Rolling my eyes, I yank the bag from the dash. My stomach is in a hissy fit of nerves. The weight of the bag sinks into my lap. One small bag to fit an entire summer history. He clears his throat.
I didn't have any tissue paper.
His stare heats my skin. I close my eyes and pull a random item from the bag.
A magic eight ball,
he says. A smile spreads across my face. I feel silly. Well, I'll never feel the burden of decision again.
Keep going,
he says. So I do. A metal slinky, silly putty poppers, and a bag of saltwater taffy. Bo blows bubbles into the silly putty and uses it to strip the ink from his owner's manual, while I weigh the slinky, letting it slide back and forth in my hands like Jake. Thank you, I say. You totally didn't have to get me anything. He shrugs and scans the spread of items between us.
You forgot something.
He reaches for the bag.
Close your eyes.
I do. I feel his hands against my cheek as he slides a pair of glasses over my nose. My hair catches in a hinge, but he's careful to be sure the glasses are tucked over my ears.
Okay,
he says.
Open.
He slaps the rearview mirror in my direction, and I see a bright red pair of heart-shaped glasses. The lenses are dark and tinted, and it takes a moment for my eyes to recognize myself. I pull my hair from where it's caught. They're supposed to be funny, I get that. But I love them. They're transformative. In the mirror, I see a girl I don't think I've ever met. They're great, I say, and immediately feel silly. They're cheap dollar store glasses, something he probably threw into his basket as an afterthought. His body leans into me as he presses his lips against mine. My entire body softens against his weight.
You should go home,
he whispers between kisses. I nod. We keep on kissing. I stay in the parking lot with Beau for far too long, but I'm lucky to find that my mom is dead asleep with her door closed when I get home. All summer I've made up reasons and excuses for why I've had to work later than normal. She's not too pleased by any of it, but never questions me. Plus, she's been sewing banners, interviewing new judges, and finding sponsors for the pageant, which means she's checked out of parenthood completely for a few months. Lucy's door is closed, like it has been for the last 2 months. I brush the door handle as I walk by, but don't open it. Ever since that day my mom started cleaning out her room, and we got into an argument, she's let it sit, like she's forgotten about it. I don't ever bring it up for fear that she'll pick up right where she left off. As I'm falling asleep, my phone buzzes. Ellen. Liar! Shit. She knows. I mean, it's not like she hasn't been keeping secrets from me, too. I can't hear her talk about Tim without remembering what Callie said that night in Harpy's about their oral mishap. I know it was something small and that in the long run, it's nothing. But I can't help but wonder what else she's not telling me. Now I'm her virgin friend who doesn't get it. Ellen.
You freaking liar. You were supposed to come to Tim's after work.
Oh, thank baby Jesus. I'd completely forgotten about Tim's party. But she'll let that go much easier than she would if she'd found out about me and Beau. My phone buzzes again. Ellen.
You missed some real D-R-A-M-A.
I flip over on my side and send a quick reply to say sorry, and that we'll catch up in the morning before scrolling down to my next message. Beau.
Night.
I sigh. I don't even care that I do. Chapter 14. I wake up to the doorbell. Before rolling out of bed, I stop to check my phone. Ellen.
Outside, let me in.
I pull on an old pair of gym shorts and trip down the stairs to answer the back door. I find Ellen's face pressed to the glass as she makes fart noises with her mouth. This whole summer has been this bizarre new territory for us. We've always been opposites. Lucy always said that the greatest friends have nothing and everything in common all at once.
Y'all girls are different versions of the same story, she would say.
But these last 2 months, I feel like we're being pulled in different directions, and I'm the only one who seems to notice. I slide the door open, and for a second, Al lets her face slide with it. She stumbles through the door and into a chair at the kitchen table.
Jesu Christo, Will! I was melting out there!
I check the time on the microwave.
It's early,
I mutter, slumping into a chair. I don't add that I was out until 2 a.m. with private school Beau.
It's payday for me. It is never too early to get paid.
She stands and opens a few cabinets, trolling around for some junk food.
And it's 11, so not early. Your mom would shit her panties if she knew you slept in this late.
Whatever. Crossing my arms on the table, I bury my head.
You're happy. Why are you so happy? I don't know. I'm alive. Life doesn't suck. School starts in a week.
She slams a cabinet door shut and whirls around.
And maybe I am not so sucky at having sex anymore?
There can't be much to it, right? But really, the entire thought of that is terrifying.
You'll see someday, she bobs her head.
Nope, I think.
Virgin for life. Team Hyman here to stay. Get dressed. Time to get paid.
There are some chips in the pantry, I say, and head for the stairs. Give me 45 minutes.
You're lucky I've got trash TV on your DVR to catch up on,
she yells after me. I take a quick shower and towel dry my hair before twisting it into a sloppy bun. I glance through my closet and decide it's too hot to try, and instead opt for gym shorts and an old t-shirt from one of my mom's pageants.
All right,
I say, jogging down the stairs. I gotta fill up Riot's dry food.
Already did, replies Ellen.
I loop around to the kitchen to find her stowing away a half-eaten bag of chips.
My mom's going to think I ate all of those, I tell her.
She would never say anything, but she wouldn't need to.
Your mom needs to get laid.
Riot hops up onto the kitchen counter, and Ellen indulges him with a solid behind-the-ear scratch.
Took my mom's car, and I basically drove here on fumes. Can we take your car?
Yeah, sure. Elle follows me out the back door, and as I'm locking the gate behind us, I ask,
And what does getting laid have to do with my mom and chips?
She shrugs and pulls on the door handle, waiting for me to unlock the car. Ever since Ellen lost her virginity, she thinks she's Dr. Ruth, the old lady sex doctor, and the cure to everything is more sexy times. It drives me crazy. I'm a virgin. I'm not stupid. I unlock the car doors and slide in behind the wheel, both our lips whistling involuntarily as we're saturated with stale heat.
Oh, God, says Elle. Roll down the mother-flippin' windows!
What I've always found ironic about Sweet 16 is that they don't go above a size 12. I mentioned this to Ellen once, but I think she pretended not to hear. The first time I went into Sweet 16 with Elle, I made a pointed effort to not be a total jerk about how uncomfortable I felt. But after coming in with her every Thursday to pick up her paycheck, I can say with confidence that I have enough evidence to form a scientific opinion of this place.
My scientific opinion. This place is a shithole, and all the girls who work here are vapid skanks who treat me like Elle's charity case friend.
The walls of Sweet 16 are covered with mirrors and mannequins with jutting hip bones, low-slung jeans, and tiny t-shirts that say things like,
I'm too pretty to do homework.
I follow Ellen through the crammed racks, careful not to knock over the whole goddamn store with my hips.
Elfell,
squeals Callie, who I've decided is my sworn enemy.
Momo,
she calls behind her with one hand cupped around her lips.
Elle, a fant, is here to pick up her moolah.
She reaches into a box below the register and hands Elle a pristine white envelope.
Hi, Willow.
Leaning toward me, she adds,
Oh, my God. Pageant boot camp has been a miracle. I almost have a six-pack, but, like, I don't want to get too muscly. That'd be gross.
It's Willow Dean, I mutter. But she doesn't hear me because Morgan, the too old to be in college, too young to be your mom's store manager, floats out from the break room. She's tall and willowy, all the things Elle is on her way to becoming.
Oh my gosh, we got all this super cute stock, and I'm capital D dying over here. Seriously, my paycheck is, like, gone. Bills who?
Elle laughs.
which pisses me off because how is that funny? L, she continues, using my nickname for my best